News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Youth Taoiseach.
Good morning, Ciara.
That guilty verdict in the trial of Donald Trump, a seedy episode, I think it's fair to say, for American politics, found guilty of falsifying business records and paying hush money to cover up his affairs. Your reaction?
My reaction is that, regardless of my personal reaction or view, I'm obviously conscious of the fact that this is a matter before the US criminal justice system. And I'm also very conscious of the fact that it's taking place with the US election due later this year. So both for the fact that there'll be a US election and the fact that it's before the courts in the US, it's probably not appropriate for me in the position that I hold to comment on.
Well, the courts have ruled. He has been found guilty. He's describing himself as very innocent, which is quite an interesting turn of phrase. But he has been found guilty. He is a convicted felon.
No, that's true. And no doubt, but as somebody who observes politics with great interest, both here in Ireland and around the world, it is a very significant moment. It is a moment of history, factually, in the United States. But I'm also conscious that there may well be further process in the courts, appeals, sentencing and the likes. And as Taoiseach of the country, it probably isn't helpful for me to comment on the matter.
Should former President Trump win the presidential election, and you know, opinion polls look like that is a distinct possibility. You said you know your personal views might be difficult to discuss in terms of diplomacy, I presume. But would you have a difficulty, you know, attending, say, the White House on St. Patrick's Day, handing a bowl of shamrock to a convicted felon who had an affair with a porn star while his wife was pregnant?
Look, I think whoever is the president of the United States is a matter for the people of the United States. And then obviously the government will continue to have close relations with the United States. So we need to be very careful here in terms of obviously who the United States decides to elect as their president is a matter for them. I wouldn't appreciate a presidential candidate in the United States giving a view on who should be the Taoiseach of Ireland or who should be in government. They have a democracy. It's obviously going to be a very important and consequential election. What I am more interested in, quite frankly, is the very different foreign policy stances that are likely to come to the fore in that election. And again, without wading into the election, I am conscious of the fact that while we have a war here on the continent of Europe and very different policy positions being put forward by the President of the United States and the former President who wishes to be President
European
again.
Leaders,
so it's going to be a very consequential election globally, obviously, but even more so than usual.
Yeah, European leaders are gearing up for potential difficulties with the Trump presidency, I believe.
Well, I think, again, rather than making it about personalities, I think what Europe has to do is Europe stands with Ukraine. Europe wants to protect the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. And I think Europe needs to constantly ask itself what all the different scenarios look like. You know, if you have a United States that is willing to help and support in that effort, as they are now, and I should acknowledge that, and indeed if you have one that aren't. There is some encouraging signs, though, I must say this, in the sense of the Congress, which is obviously controlled by the Republicans, or at least the House of Representatives. It did pass a very significant package of financial support for Ukraine. So, look, I do know there's, even within the Republicans, a strong support for Ukraine, but I think this election in November, the US presidential election, will be even more consequential for the rest of the world than US presidential elections generally are.
Yeah. One of the things that's happening today is the first phase of the proof of concept for body-worn cameras for An Garda Síochána is being rolled out. This idea of, I suppose, a pilot, sort of Dublin, Limerick, Waterford, that guards will be wearing these now. Can you explain to us what's happening? Because, you know, I was discussing this with the head of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties earlier, and I asked him about a proof of concept rollout. And he, a little bit like myself, was slightly confused by it.
I say very respectfully, I'm not sure what's particularly confusing about it.
What does the proof of concept idea mean?
So we're going to start in three locations around the country, effectively, is what it means. This is a new technology being brought into Ireland. However, we are outliers in relation to this. The Commission on the Future of Policing, a group that we put together to look at policing in Ireland, very clearly made a recommendation in relation to this. I am so sick and tired of living in a country where the only person who turns up at a protest without a camera is a member of An Garda Síochána. And I think it's really encouraging that we live in a country where the Gardaí themselves are embracing this idea of actually having a camera present on their uniform as they patrol. So what we're starting today, and I want to commend Helen McEntee for her leadership in this, what we're starting today is the rollout of these body cams, starting in Dublin, in three Garda stations, in Kevin Street and Store Street and in Pier Street, then next on to Limerick and then next on to Waterford. And then obviously there will be an opportunity for the government to examine impact, to work with Garda management, and then ultimately to see the rollout across the country. But this is very significant. Okay. I know it's very significant. I've talked to domestic violence support groups who work with people in relation to sexual gender-based violence. And they tell me that these cameras can make all of the difference, because the moment a guard turns up on the scene after such a horrific incident, those very, very early moments can be absolutely crucial in terms of gathering evidence. And that's one practical example.
Okay. We just have a listen for a moment to what Liam Herrick had to say a little bit earlier this morning here on News Talk Breakfast.
Our understanding would mean you test it in the field. If it works, you go with it. If it doesn't work, you don't go ahead.
Okay.
The language has shifted a bit, as you said, to a proof of concept. And I suppose our concern is that it's now assumed that we're going to roll this out regardless of what the results are. And it's not clear what are the metrics for measuring success.
That was Liam Herrick there, head of the ICCL. What he said was that his understanding was that this would be rolled out to decrease attacks on guards and improve Garda behaviour, which is what this is where his words. But that in other jurisdictions, that hasn't been shown to be the case with these cameras being worn by police forces.
I get a little bit frustrated about some of this, and I don't make this in any way personal about Liam Herrick, a fine man whom I know and have regard for. But like, there's men and women who put on a uniform every day. They put themselves in harm's way. The husband or wife maybe in the bed upstairs hears the door closed behind them and wonders, will their husband or wife or son or daughter come home safely, or will they face assault, will they face attack, will they face worse? And you know what? If the Gardaí ask us to do something to give them a little bit more protection, this government's going to do it. It's very easy for those of us who don suits and sit in offices to never have to put ourselves in direct harm's way to actually tell the Gardaí what they need. I like to listen to the Gardaí on the front line, so does the minister. This is an essential tool to help keep Gardaí safe. It's also, though, a really important tool for the public. Remember, we had the situation with the riot in Dublin only a period of time ago. How different could that have been in terms of evidence gathering had Gardaí had body cams? So this is a practical measure. It's not something we dreamt up. It's something that's in many countries. It's something that's recommended by the Commission on the Future Policing. And we need to embrace technology in relation to this. Of course, there's safeguards in place. And the proof of concept, in my view, is a very simple idea. It's basically saying it's a new technology, introduce it in three parts of the country, and then see, does it need to be tweaked? Did it work well? Is there any feedback? What are Gardaí saying about it? What are the public saying about it? And get it right.
Okay. Taoiseach, the Children's Hospital has obviously been back in the news this week. I don't know if I've ever used this word in an interview before, but I think it's probably applicable. An omni-shambles. Brian Stanley, the head of the PAC, was talking to us yesterday. He said it could run to 2.5 billion in terms of cost. Let's remember that it was supposed to be 600 or 700 million when it was first touted, that no children will likely be seen in the Children's Hospital until 2026. You yourself were the Minister for Health in 2017 at the time that the original funding of 1 billion was sanctioned, at the time the tendering process was complete, and at the time that BAM was selected as the construction company. So I suppose what I'm asking you, are you the minister who is responsible for what we are hearing, which is that the contract with BAM was badly designed at the time?
Who are we hearing that from, though? Because, I mean, obviously the Sinn Féin party are saying that.
Well, we're hearing it in the Dáil, said by elected representatives.
Yeah, and political opponents of mine. What we're hearing from parents across the country is we need a new children's hospital. And there is a cause of huge frustration that I share, that this has taken longer than it should have and that it's cost more than it should have. But can we just remind listeners that there's three parts to the National Children's Hospital. There's a centre in Talla, open and seeing children today. A centre in Connolly, open and seeing children today. Both centres improving wait times for children. And there's a major hospital being built in St James's that's 92% complete today. Now, I think the Tánaiste hit the nail on the head yesterday in relation to this, and I need to be careful what I say here. But there's always a bit of wrangling that goes on when you get towards the end of a major infrastructural project. And what we need to do as the state, and we need to support the Development Board in doing, is making sure that they push back in relation to any additional claims that come in, and there's some signs of success, and to make sure that we hold the developer to the terms of the contract in terms of delivery. There are penalty clauses in the contract, I should point that out. Again, that's something that hasn't been mentioned. And there are options available to government and to the Development Board in relation to that. But this hospital is 92% complete, and I guarantee you it's going to be a source of great pride. When Terminal 2 was built, when the Port Tunnel was built, people probably use the word omni-shambles there as well.
I fully accept the need for it. I fully accept that it looks like a state-of-the-art facility, and I fully accept that down the line we will all think it is a great asset for our nation's children. I fully accept all of that, but I'm just looking at stuff that has came out from Merrion Street at the time of this. It says the development board is finalising the contract and contract award details are commercially sensitive. So BAM, according to Merrion Street in 2017, had been awarded the contract. The tendering process was finished and the contract wasn't complete, according to Merrion Street, when you look at that at the time. So is that the crux of the matter? And Minister, it was on your watch.
Sorry, it was the government made a decision. I was the Minister for Health at the time. There were previous ministers involved in this. There's been subsequent ministers. This is a project that's going on for many, many years. But I can tell you what happened when I turned up in the Department of Health.
Please do. This had
been the gracious game of pass the parcel going on for decades. And sometimes the easiest way to avoid challenge in politics is to dither and not make a decision. Do you remember all the debate? Where are we going to put it?
Yeah,
when will we put it? When will we build it?
So is no one responsible for a massive overrun, 300% more than it was supposed to cost?
Of course people are responsible, including me and including the government, for the final cost of this project. We're also, though, responsible for the impact that this project is going to have on children's health services. And, you know, think of some of the other things that we've spent $2 billion on. Think of some of the things we've spent $2 billion on only in recent periods of time, having to respond to the migration crisis being one simple example of that. This is a hospital that's going to serve not just my children, not just their children, but their children's children.
Would you have done something differently with hindsight?
Oh, let me be clear. There are lessons in relation to this. There's a PwC report that shows clearly around rules around procurement and contracts that do and have already been acted upon by government. But can I say this? After generations of debate about the Children's Hospital, it's 92% complete. Two out of three parts are open. And we're going to keep people's feet to the fire now to get this project done for once and for all.
All right. The migration issue, Taoiseach. More tents moved yesterday from the Grand Canal. We hear the plan now is to have large-scale migrant centres outside Dublin. Kerry and Westmeath are being reported as potential centres. You might confirm that for us. But also, what we are seeing currently around the country is even small migrant centres seem to be getting pushback from local communities. How are you going to get the people of Kerry or Westmeath to be on board with a large one which might house hundreds of single male migrants in their communities?
So can I say this, that there's been no decision made in relation to any further sites other than Thornton Hall. And I want to see the public service now show me how Thornton Hall will work, how it will work well, how they'll engage with the community and how it'll have real impact. When I became Taoiseach...
Is Thornton Hall... Is it just going to be a very large tented area? Like just tents, accommodate as many as we can? Is that the idea?
It's going to provide tented accommodation, sanitation, keep people safe. It's going to provide shelter because we've got to be honest with people in this country and we've got to be honest with people who are coming to this country. That's what Ireland is currently in a position to do. Ireland is not in a position currently to provide turnkey accommodation and I'm not... willing to see a scenario where we continue to go around the country taking hotels out of use and all of a sudden the town or the village has nowhere to have the Holy Communion, the funeral, the wedding, the baptism and all the other celebrations that can take place in hotels, the impact on tourism. We need to move from the emergency response, which was perfectly understandable why that was required, to a more sustainable model. And I've been around the country a lot, you know why, there's elections coming up, but I've been around the country a lot over the last while and I meet people. And I can tell you the gap between the conversation that takes place in the bubble around migration and the conversation that takes place around the country is enormous. Because people in Ireland are compassionate, they're decent, they're not far right. The overwhelming majority of people reject that extremism. They're compassionate, they want to help, but they also want a bit of common sense. And they are really frustrated, as am I, that the conversation about migration seems to begin and end with one around accommodation. It has to look at the rules,
okay,
the welfare system. It has to look at checks. It has to look at processing time.
So
all of
Thornton Hall will look a little bit like maybe refugee camps that we have seen in other countries. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but those large tented centres. Is that something that is sellable to local communities in rural Ireland? That they will now be, if we're going to have these large scale ones, that they might have something like that on their doorstep with hundreds and hundreds of migrants being, I don't know if you could say being held there. I don't know how much freedom people have.
They're not detained. People
have
absolute
freedom.
They can
come and go.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
So that there would be hundreds of them living in these areas, often in small rural communities.
So no, what I'm saying to people is this: there hasn't been any decision made on any sites other than Thornton Hall. That's the first thing to say. Secondly, this is a shift in policy in recognising that we're not in a position to provide at this moment in time purpose-built facilities for people, nor is it desirable to continue to take community facilities and hotels out of public use. But what I'm also saying to people is that's not all we're asking communities to do. We're saying to communities, we're going to get our act together as well. We're building a new migration system in real time. This country used to see about 3,000 people come in each year. It now sees about 22,000.
Yeah, it's been an enormous increase.
And you've seen, if you turn on your television screens in the last few days, you've seen now a real effort. For example, my colleague, the Minister for Justice, has freed up 100 Gardaí to work on each is like collaboration with the PSNI around protecting the common travel area, around deportations. What we need to do, and I've seen this the world over, and when I engage with European counterparts, faster processing times. If you have a right to be here, you get a yes, you get integrated, you can work
and
make a contribution.
And then people who have no right to be here, will they be deported? Because that's been an issue too, that deportations have been very, very low.
They will of course be deported, but again, sometimes this is respectfully a little bit misrepresented. Deportation doesn't mean putting handcuffs on people and putting them on planes. Deportation can mean saying you don't have a right to be here, therefore your entitlement to welfare stops, your entitlement to a PPS number, your entitlement to work stops. And many people do leave when they're told they don't have a right to be here, and we need to continue to show the public how that is the reality.
Okay. The Middle East, obviously the war in Gaza, we have now recognised the state of Palestine, which is largely a symbolic gesture, but I think one that is important to the Palestinian people, Taoiseach. Does the government have any plans for more concrete support of the Palestinian people than just that?
Yeah, so you've acknowledged the importance of the recognition, and I think it is, because even yesterday we saw another European member state, Slovenia, indicate that it now intends to do this. And at a time when some are trying to bomb to oblivion the hope of a two-state solution, we must keep it alive. But yes, the government helps in very practical ways as well, including through humanitarian aid, significantly increasing the humanitarian aid for Palestine that we're providing to the UN, using our contacts internationally to continue to push for a peace process. I spoke to the Prime Minister of Lebanon yesterday as an example of that. But also at an EU level, I think there is now a need for concrete action. It's not enough just to say, I'd like a ceasefire, we want a ceasefire. It's not enough just to be repulsed and disgusted with what you're seeing. We need to take practical actions. I said at the European Council representing Ireland, I said there's an onus on us to use every lever at our disposal.
What are they going to look like?
So what I think that looks like is we have what we call, at an EU level, there's what they call an association agreement. That's effectively a trade benefit agreement between the European Union and Israel. That has human rights clauses in it. It's high time now that that agreement is reviewed. If it's found that they're not compliant with human rights clauses, which I can't see how they possibly can be with the humanitarian catastrophe, that should mean practical action, including sanctions. It's important this happens at an EU level, though, because these are EU competencies.
Okay. Obviously, the Irish Defence Forces are still in Lebanon. Last year, we saw the tragic loss of life of Sean Rooney. Has anything occurred? Has anything in terms of developments of the killing and the killers of Sean Rooney being brought to justice? Where are we at with that?
So I spoke to the Prime Minister of Lebanon yesterday about a range of issues, including this matter, because the loss of Private Sean Rooney was a devastating moment for Sean's family, for our defence forces, for the UN mission. We have around 300 people peacekeeping in the UNIFIL mission. We're going to send 30 more shortly. So we need to see justice for the death of Sean Rooney, for the murder of Sean Rooney. I spoke to the Lebanese Prime Minister yesterday. My understanding is that an accused is due in court next Friday. And I did express the frustration of the people of Ireland.
Didn't turn up the last time it was due in court, isn't that correct?
Yeah, and I expressed that frustration very clearly, that the delays that have been seen in relation to this trial, this was due to happen last December, has added pain on top of absolute tragedy. So I did very strongly emphasise that to the Prime Minister of Lebanon yesterday.
A couple of brief things before I let you go. With regard to housing, one of the big issues for this election upcoming and also for the country, I would suggest as a whole, you had said in one of your opening speeches as Taoiseach that we should have 250,000 houses built over 5 years, about 50,000 a year on average. But the Housing Commission said very shortly afterwards that what we actually need is 80,000, which would be the 50,000 you're talking about plus the 30,000 that Housing for All are talking about combined. If you build 250,000, it's still not going to solve the housing crisis. When are we going to build enough?
And I think their period was a little bit longer than my period, but that kind of misses the point. I mean, the point is we need to significantly scale up. When I said we needed to build 250,000 houses, there were many pundits sitting in this studio, I'm sure, scoffing that idea. It couldn't be done. We've seen 30,000, 32,000 houses already commence construction this year. We've almost seen more houses commence construction this year than we saw new homes delivered in the entirety of last year. Every single day, every single working day, there's now 350 new homes commencing construction. And I am restless to do more in relation to this. The Housing Commission report is kind of fascinating. Before anybody had read it.
Big numbers, though.
Absolutely. But before anyone had read it, everybody said, are you going to agree with all the recommendations? When you actually start to look at the recommendations, there's a number of things government is already doing. There's a number of things that government agrees with, some that opposition agree with, some that opposition don't agree with. It is a helpful input now as we get ready to revise Housing for All. Later this year, we will publish revised housing targets. And I'm very clear that the figures that I outlined are going to have to be delivered at a minimum.
Taoiseach, the Stardust victims, the 48 people who lost their lives tragically in the Stardust, a commemoration has been announced. This is going to happen. For the people who and their families who I suppose not only did they lose those young people's lives so tragically, but they've struggled for so long with all of that. It's happening on the 23rd of June?
Yeah, look, one of the first things I had to do when I became Taoiseach and really wanted to do was issue a state apology to the Stardust families. The way they've been treated by this state was appalling, to put it very, very mildly. But I did promise that it wasn't just about an apology, it was also about working with them on a number of other issues. And one issue that they felt strongly on, as do I, was the need to have some form of national commemoration. And we've been working with the families, and we've now agreed that on, I think it's a Sunday, the 23rd of June, there will now be a national commemoration in the Garden of Remembrance. And very much that will be designed and co-designed with the families and with the survivors.
Very lastly, what does the Taoiseach do on Bank Holiday Monday?
Canvas. Get out and meet people for the local and European elections, and really looking forward to doing that.
Taoiseach Simon Harris, thank you very much for joining us on News Talk.
Thank you so much.